Good. Take out your electronic or physical Bible and flip to the book of Matthew, chapter 25. We'll be reading from verse 31 to 40. Again, it's found in the book of Matthew, chapter 25, verse 31 to 40. Good. This is the word of the Lord. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" The king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." This is the word of the Lord. Today, we are very honored to have Pastor Matthew Smedley to speak to us today. His title is Sheep and Goats.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me here with you this morning. Very honored to be able to share with you. I just want to start out by telling you a little bit about my own personal story. When I was a young adult, I was studying in university and then in seminary. I never expected to kind of be where I'm at today, or even here sharing with you. My hope was really to do missions work overseas. And so, there's a few things that were not in the plans for me. One was staying in Canada. The other was running an organization. Never saw myself doing that. And the third thing was really most importantly that I didn't think I would ever be working in an inner city with individuals who were struggling with poverty. And so, part of that is because I grew up in rural Pennsylvania in the United States. I love being out in wide open spaces. Had lots of fears and prejudices about big city life. Had very little exposure to poverty. So as a young person, I was led to believe that poverty was really just a result of people's choices. It was their own fault if people were poor. And even more, it was obvious to me at the time that people who were poor were also somehow like spiritually inferior to me, right? I thought the Bible had taught that wealth was a blessing from God, and so if people weren't, doing okay, then probably they weren't receiving God's blessing, and probably because of, their lifestyle, some sort of sinful lifestyle. But pretty well everything that I thought as a kid was dead wrong. So I wish it didn't take me so long to realize it, but it took me a long time to realize it. So fast forward to about 2005. I was invited by a friend of mine to start volunteering at Mission Possible, where I now work. I showed up on a Saturday morning. I helped to serve food to individuals who were hungry, and they were lined up in need of food. And it was a really great experience for me. I developed an appreciation for that work, and I came back a few months later, and then I came back a few months after that. And then in the following year, I was at actually a transitional place in my employment. And so I was actually able to start working part-time at Mission Possible. Even as I started, working there and had volunteered, I still had a lot of the same prejudices that I had as a young person. I knew deep down that this was good work to be involved in, but I didn't really know why, truly. So it's really when I began to hear the stories from some of my new friends in the downtown East Side, stories that included things like injury, trauma, mental illness, abuse, foster care history, family breakup, addiction, job loss, all kinds of things, even refugees fleeing violence. People had faced all kinds of challenges in their lives. I also heard stories from many of those same people and others who had done things that we would really consider successful. People who had accomplished a great deal in their lives. They were professional athletes. They had PhDs. They were engineers. They had been business owners. If you can name it, somebody in the downtown East Side who I was getting to know had done it. It was completely eye-opening to me. But it, you know, kind of raised the question, how did they get to this place? How did they get to a point of being homeless or experiencing poverty? So to answer that question, I've got a question for you this morning. And maybe you can just raise your hand if you know anyone, or even you yourself have experienced any of these things. Severe injuries, trauma, abuse, foster care experience, family breakup, addiction, job loss, any other challenges in your life? Has anybody had any challenges in their lives? Few, I see a few hands, yeah? Yet, we all have to some degree, right? We all face challenges to some degree. But for most of us, when we experience those things, those real hardships, it hasn't led to extreme poverty or homelessness in our lives. So it makes us wonder, why is that? What's the thing that makes the difference? Is it, you know, how are we not in that same situation? Well, the reality is that it's not the sense of determination or the sense of intelligence, ability to work hard, or, you know, what's on the inside that has really helped us. But it's really the support that we have in our lives that makes all the difference. The cause of homelessness, when you really think about it, the common link to people's stories is not the challenges that they have faced, but it's the sense of breakdown in the community, in the neighborhood, and the family support that helps people when they experience those challenges. I would have never have learned this for myself if I wouldn't have gotten to know people in the downtown East Side. My understanding of the complexities of homelessness and poverty wasn't taught to me in my biblical studies or seminary training. It didn't come from any sort of academic learning, but really through experience, through me out on the streets, learning, you know, to getting to know people, learning their stories. They were the ones who were teaching me. And I learned, you know, really from individuals who were marginalized, were really in a place of feeling stuck and powerless to change their situation. So that's a little bit of my own personal story of how transformation in my own life has taken place just in encountering this work. But I'd like to share a little bit about what the work is like that we do at Mission Possible. So if you haven't heard of Mission Possible before, we're an organization in downtown East Side, just a few kilometers west of here, and have been around for about 30 years, and we're started out of a church in East Vancouver. We call ourselves a Christian Community Economic Development Organization, and I know that's kind of a big term, but I think you'll get the gist of what that means when we watch a video in a second here. But if you're not familiar with the downtown East Side is it's about 1 square kilometer in geographical size, but there's about 20,000 people who live there. So it's a pretty dense neighborhood. It's actually made up of 5 neighborhoods, but it's a really dense 1 kilometer. And of the 20,000, there are over 2,000 people who are homeless. Some of those stay regularly in shelters, some are out on the streets. It's a rapidly changing neighborhood, and new developments coming in and things like that that put pressure on low-income housing and end up leading to displacement for more individuals as those new developments come in. So if you think about it, 20,000 people living in that neighborhood, nearly half are living in poverty. That's about 10,000 people living in poverty. And the majority of these people live in social housing. There's a lot of social housing kind of clustered in the downtown east side. And in that, the unemployment rate is about 75%. So it's a community that has significant social and economic challenges, right? And these challenges are kind of what has given it a reputation across Canada and around the world. But at Mission Possible, what we try to do is not really look at the challenges and the deficits that are in the community, but really want to emphasize the gifts and abilities and the beauty of what's happening there. So while many people kind of overlook this and overlook the potential of the people that live there, in doing that, you know, those gifts and abilities often remain hidden. So at Mission Possible, we know that people are created in the image of God. We know that there are essential parts of our DNA that come from our Creator. And when we don't fully live into those, when those aren't exercised or enlivened, we suffer. Our whole life suffers. For example, just like you and I, people in the downtown east side are created to be relational beings, to live in community, to have good relationships with one another. But they often lack good, healthy connections with other people because poverty is a really isolating experience. And just like you and I, people in the downtown east side are created to work. That's part of our DNA. But they often lack opportunities for real, meaningful ways to engage with work. So when any of us are not able to exercise the gifts and abilities and those God-given talents and who we are, we don't feel like whole people. Our self-worth suffers. We lose sight of how valuable we are as a person. We struggle to feel a sense of dignity and a sense of purpose. So, you know, what often happens is a sense of people can fall into a depression that's often, you know, kind of caught up with hopelessness and a sense of despair. So through our work at Mission Possible, we are really helping those who are challenged by homelessness and poverty achieve a renewed sense of dignity and purpose through meaningful work. And we're working to create opportunities for people to once again experience good work, to experience connections with one another, and ultimately to move out of this place of feeling stuck, feeling hopeless, or feeling ashamed about their situation. So I'd like to share just a couple of stories with you, and I want to start with one video. And this is my friend Chris, who was willing to tell his story, and we'll just watch it here on the screen. Doesn't want to advance for me. It's the second slide. There it goes. Technical difficulties, stay tuned. There it is.
But in my mind, I'm going, well, you're going to have to stop this. This is ridiculous. They gave me the opportunity to work things out, and I took a hold of that. When I first met Chris, he was quite shy, introverted. I think working on the clean team definitely opened him up to a lot of people back in his life. The approach was not overbearing, not underbearing. It was just a great amount of support. Chris pretty quickly became a leader on the team. He invests himself fully in the work that he does and starting to see him fully realize the power he has to lift everyone up around him. Throughout the 6 months that Chris worked with us, I saw confidence growing in him. I think that confidence is what has driven him forward now. It's what got him to get a job on his own.
I'm working now. I'm healthy, I'm much more open, and I come back to complaints and being scared that you can't go and do it. Well, that's the truth. That's the truth. I don't even think sometimes they know what realize what they're doing, because it's a little bigger picture than one person. But all the pieces together, it's a happening thing. I couldn't have said that before going to interview, but I do make a difference.
So Chris's experience is not all that different than my friend Janet, who's pictured here in the middle of this slide. Janet's life was also really full of hardships. She's a residential school survivor, grew up with lots of family challenges. She struggled with some addiction. Life has been difficult for her on many fronts. When she first came to Mission Possible, she thought that she was unemployable. She didn't think she had the skills. She certainly didn't have any confidence, and she thought she was too old to work. And those feelings were really her way of expressing her lack of self-worth and self-confidence. But the reality is she was experiencing what people who struggle with poverty experience. It robs people of their dignity. However, when she walked in the door of Mission Possible, we believed in her, and we knew that she could succeed. And that's what she started to hear, that she was worth investing in, and that we believed in her. And it took some time for her to start believing it. But fast forward a couple of years, and Janet has moved into a job outside of Mission Possible. It wasn't easy for her, but the confidence that she developed because of the caring people that were around her and the meaningful work opportunity that she had was really transformative for her. And so she has kept that job, and she has proven to others, but most importantly to herself, that she is a gifted, capable child of God. She now believes it so much that she was willing to get up on the stage at our annual fundraiser last year in front of 450 people and tell her story. She never could have done that prior to the encounter she's had at Mission Possible, and we're so happy to be able to just journey with her and encourage her. She's really experienced empowerment through that, and really that momentum that she has gained is really propelling her life forward. My friend Michael here is in the front of the kayak. He was a gentleman who has a physical disability, and that's been a real challenge for him. His right side, although not completely paralyzed, doesn't really work very well. His right hand he can't use, and he has to wear a brace on his left or his right leg in order to walk. But Michael is a guy who was volunteering with us and was showing that he was willing to push himself and was determined to move forward. And so we were able to give him an opportunity to start working on our litter pickup team. And even though he only has one working arm, it was, you know, nothing that held him back. He just had to, you know, to keep up with everybody, he had to work faster, and he did it. He's amazing. Last week, he and one of our supervisors, or a team of people, but led by one of our supervisors, went for a retreat over to Rivendell on Bowen Island, and they had kayaking planned, and when Michael came down, the person who was kind of leading the kayaking was like, "Oh, I don't think this is going to work. I don't think you're going to be able to participate." And you know, Michael didn't take no for an answer, and so he went and enjoyed his time out in the kayak on the water. When he came back, he was also wanting to return the kayak himself, and so there's a nice big high dock you have to get up onto and everything, and the person up on the dock was trying to figure out how he was going to help and make this happen, and by the time he could do anything, Michael had already gotten up onto the dock and had returned that. And that really speaks to a lot of what people in the Downtown East Side experience. It's that they have gifts, they have abilities, but they're often underestimated because of the challenges that they face. The next slide is of Loretta here. And Loretta is someone who now works with Mission Possible Maintenance as well. When Loretta first came to Mission Possible, she struggled to find the courage to even interview. She was probably one of the most shy people that you would ever meet, and it was a real barrier for her. She was hardly able to make any eye contact. She would turn bright red whenever she talked to people, and it really held her back. But today, although she still turns bright red a lot of the time when she talks, that doesn't stop her. She regularly joins into conversations with our team, which is something she rarely would have done before coming to Mission Possible. She's an incredibly cheerful person, always early, every day, sometimes showing up an hour early just to get ready for the day. And she's dependable, she's committed, and always ready to help out her coworkers. But the change that she has experienced and that's happened in her life, just through the opportunity to be worked, to be trained and to work, has been really dramatic for her. And I could tell you lots more stories of different people who have been part of Mission Possible and have all struggled with the effects of poverty, the isolation, the sense of being or feeling devalued, the sense of hopelessness that tries to take root. But God's desire is that people know that He loves them and that we also love them. And so that is why intentionally serving those who are challenged by poverty is so important. So question for today is why does caring for the poor matter? So, for starters, as followers of Jesus, we really are continuing His mission to care for the poor. All throughout His earthly ministry, Jesus cared for the poor and reminded His disciples to care for the poor. He said that in order for us to obey the law of God, we have to love God with our whole being and love our neighbors as ourselves. Now, if you recall in the New Testament, in the book of Luke, where Jesus says that, he says, this is how this is the greatest commandment, to love God, right? And your neighbor as yourself. And then he follows it with a story that you probably are very familiar with. Does anybody remember what it is? The story of the Good Samaritan. Does that sound familiar? I'm going to just read it really quickly. It's in Luke chapter 10, and it says this: A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, they beat him, they went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down that same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you have." Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert of the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." This going and doing likewise that Jesus talks about, this caring for those in need, providing for those who are without, it is not optional. So the first answer to why it matters is that it's not optional as followers of Jesus. Do we need any more reasons than that? That should be enough to get our attention on its own. So this caring for the poor is serious stuff. In the book of Matthew, chapter 25, which we read together, Jesus was talking about the day of judgment, where people will be separated into 2 groups. So what was the criteria for dividing up the 2 groups? Well, it wasn't whether or not they went to church. It wasn't how much money they gave to the church. It wasn't even what they believed. So Jesus has a lot of hard sayings, and this certainly is one of the hard ones. But there is some good news for us in that text. And it comes by way of instruction on how we serve and how we worship Jesus. And it's this: if we desire to give to Jesus, then we need to give to the poor. If we want to spend time with Jesus, then we need to spend time with the poor. If we're looking to be a part of Jesus's ministry on earth, well, we must be actively caring for the poor. He told us where he would be present, where we would find him, and all we have to do is join in to that invitation. The second reason that caring for the poor is important is because it keeps us focused on the things that matter. In our day and age, there are countless things that are clamoring for our attention, whether it's entertainment, whether it's work, whether it's family, whether it's church, whether it's hobbies, whether it's our health, whatever. There are lots of things, and none of these are bad in and of themselves. But there is always a temptation to move them to the center of our lives. But caring for the poor always brings us back to the acts and the practice of the core of our faith. This is how we follow Jesus. This is how we serve Jesus, according to Jesus. So there's multiple passages in the Bible that warn us of the temptations of wealth. And I won't get into that, but I will say just one of those is from Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6, and he says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness." So caring for the poor keeps us centered on the mission of Jesus and actually protects us from the things that pull at our hearts and our desires and tries to tempt them away from keeping the mission and the work of God's kingdom first in our lives. The third reason that caring for the poor matters, and there's lots more, but I'll end with this one. When we care for the poor, we are the ones who are also transformed through that act. Not only does God use us to be his hands and feet, to care for people and to serve the poor, but through that serving, we are changed. We experience transformation. I think a lot of times we think caring for the poor is purely for their benefit, we are bringing something to them, when in reality, the opposite is just as true. Dr. Mark Mann, who is a professor at Point Loma Nazarene University, said, God's grace works in such a way that when we seek to offer grace, love, and compassion to others, we are every bit as much the recipients of God's grace, love, and compassion. And I can tell you today with complete honesty and sincerity that this has been true, and I have experienced this myself. So even as a young, budding Bible scholar in Bible college, I missed this reality of Jesus's call to care for the poor. It wasn't until I actually got involved and began, working with Mission Possible, that I began to hear stories, got to know people, to know their names. That is when I really feel like I began to understand the heart of God. It was only through this work that I have truly understood the depths of his love for you and for me. Through the acts of serving the poor, I have grown tremendously in my own faith, in my own love for God, and I know that I never could have experienced that in the same way, in the same depth otherwise. So if I'm to be completely honest with you, I shouldn't have been surprised that was the case. If I would have actually heard and listened and believed what Jesus had said, I would have known that there was that he was there among the poor all along. He was just waiting for me to come minister to him, so that in turn he could minister to me. God is amazing in the way that he flips things around. So I'd like to close with this. One of the men who has shaped the theology in my own denomination, which is the Church of the Nazarene, is a man named John Wesley. He was an English reformer, and he had caring for the poor really central to his own teaching. It was something he took incredibly seriously. And his theology has helped me to understand the reasons why caring for the poor matters so much. He had a slogan that he's famous for, and you may have heard it before, but it's this: earn all you can, save all you can, give all you can. It's pretty simple. Earn all you can, save all you can, in order to give all you can. And John Wesley, he was a man who put this into practice. He literally gave away everything that he had throughout his life, and he had made a significant amount of money in his work. But he knew that care for the poor was not merely an act of obedience to God. He knew that when he was caring for the poor, he was actually caring for the Lord Jesus himself. And through that act, he experienced and was changed by the grace of God. So, where does this call to care for the poor leave us today? How do we respond to this? I know you're all eager to get out your wallets and your checkbooks and just start giving money away from this amazing sermon, but just hold on. I want to say that when we care for the poor, there really are some best practices that we can use, and it's simply this: discern together. Whoops, discern together, not alone. Right? As a church, as a church community, among fellow believers, that's the way to discern how we best live out this care for the poor. Just bringing people into your home that you've just met and are in need, or giving away all of your money may be a really noble thing to do. But it may not be the best way to care for the poor. But if your heart is stirred today by reading these texts, by hearing God's call on each one of us, then I encourage you talk with one another. Talk with your church leadership. Find the common common ways that the Spirit is leading and pulling on your heartstrings. And together, discern how the Lord is calling you. And I promise you this, not only will you be caring for the poor in that work, not only will you also be ministering to Jesus himself through that, but you will be transformed through that experience. Can I pray for you? Creator God, who has made us all in your image, we thank you for loving us so much that you became one of us and lived among us. You showed us through your example what it means to live a life of love, and that your love and care for the poor is a privilege for us to be able to do also. Empower us today to follow your example. Lead us by the power of your Holy Spirit. Show us how we can follow you and respond to your call in our lives to care for the poor. May we meet you in the faces of those we seek to love and serve. Thank you for changing us through that work and transforming our hearts to be more like yours. May your name be glorified for all that you're doing in our lives and in our world. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.